Just a quick break there.
We're good? Okay. Well, good afternoon again, everyone. This is an informal hearing on case number PU-19-329. It is 2:15 p.m. on Wednesday, January 22nd, 2020. I'm Commissioner Brian Crotchis, joined by Commissioner Julie Fedorchuk and Commissioner Randy Christman. I don't have any opening comments. Commissioner Fedorchuk?
Nor do I.
Commissioner Christman?
No, sir.
Okay. This is an informal hearing involving only undisputed facts. If there are any disputed facts, we will immediately close the informal hearing and issue a notice of hearing. The applicant, again, goes first in this type of proceeding, but before we do that, we will have staff introduce themselves for the record, followed by members of the company who are present in Bismarck, as well as those on the telephone after that.
John Shue with advisory staff.
Victor Shook with advocacy staff.
Brian Johnson, advocacy staff.
Chris Bubalt, Xcel Energy Transmission.
Benjamin Halama, Xcel Energy Revenue Requirements.
Dave Cedarquist, Xcel Energy.
Holly Hinman, Xcel Energy Regulatory Affairs.
Matt Harris, Xcel Energy Legal.
Rebecca Eilers, Xcel Energy Regulatory Affairs.
Michelle Terwilliger, Xcel Energy Regulatory.
Chris Shaw, Xcel Energy Regulatory.
Chris Franks, Xcel Revenue Requirements.
Ryan Streen, Xcel Energy.
Martha Haas Miller, Xcel Energy Regulatory.
Nate Hertz, Xcel Energy Revenue Requirements.
Okay, thank you. It's all yours.
Okay. All right. I'll walk through the slide similar to the last time. Again, we included the tariff here. I think the only one call out on the slide two is that this rider only includes projects that are previously granted ADPs. So I'll just throw that in there. slide three gives the same overview, and so this is the 2020 would be the fifth year of the RER in effect in North Dakota. We are including two new wind projects for a total of eight projects and a total revenue requirement in 2020 of $4.8 million. And then this reflects the same 9.85% ROE that we had in the TCR rider per the TCJA settlement. The proposed rate here and the residential bill impact is assuming a January 1 implementation date. I didn't update this slide because we didn't file anything to put that information out there, and so wanted to keep it consistent with what we filed in our petition for this one. I do have a similar slide that breaks down the different implementation dates similar to what I showed it for the TCR rider. In this case here, the January 1 rate would be 0.21 cents per kilowatt hour with a typical residential customer impact of $1.62 per month. This switching to slide four shows the five-year history of the RER rider. The revenue requirements in 2020 are the largest since the start of this rider and the largest residential customer bill impact. As I mentioned, switching to slide five, there are eight projects within the RER rider in the current year's petition. the two new ones are seven and eight on this list, Blazing Star 2 and Freeborn. Crown Bridge is also listed here as an in-service date of 2020. Crown Bridge was included in last year's filing and with an anticipated in-service date of December 2019. That has been delayed, and now this updated file or this petition reflects that new anticipated in-service date. Slide six gives a comparison of what the 2019 revenue requirements were compared to 2020. The biggest driver between the 2 years is really those four projects that we had placed in the rider last year. Those four projects were placed in service at the end, or three of them were placed in service at the end of 2019. And so the revenue requirements in 2019 were relatively small. Now that we have a full year of revenue requirements in 2020 for those projects, they make up the vast majority of the increase. Along with that, the production tax credits increased, or at least the current method for providing those back to customers increased as well, and so giving that those additional wind farms in service, the PTCs have increased, and those offset some of that revenue requirement increase that you're seeing on those projects. The total change from 2019 to 2020 is about $2.7 million. The PTCs net of those 2019 projects make up about $1.9 million of that difference, and then the remaining 2020 projects that we're adding here make up the other $700,000. And then Border and Courtney that have been in this rider since 2015 and 16, there's a slight decrease year over year as those revenue requirements are decreasing now.
Can you say that again on the PTC? Some of it is due to more projects coming online being factored in, but then I'm trying to remember, was the rate at 0.24 and went to 0.245, or was it 0.23? Or
0.24, if my recollection serves me right. If anybody on the phone has that in front of them,
or is it 2.4?
Clarify if I'm wrong. I'm pretty sure it's 24, and so really the increase that we're seeing here is, you know, we have a full year now for those three wind projects that went into service at the end of 19. Mm-hmm. We have a full year of production that they're getting those credits on.
Okay.
Slide 7 goes through the different implementation scenarios, and so as I stated earlier, the January 1 implementation date would result in a residential bill impact of approximately $1.62 per month, with a March 1 that goes up to $1.99, and April 1 would go up to $2.23.
Before we go down into some of the additional calculations, the question I had from a couple slides ago, is this the full package of the wind portfolio, or are there a couple more projects out there still coming in?
Dakota Range 1 and 2 is in 2021.
Right. All right. Okay. Thank you.
Can you tell me why in the previous hearing, the difference between a January 1 implementation date and a March 1 implementation date was $2.31 going up to $2.50. So that's less than 10% difference. Here, from January 1 to March 1, is like a 20% larger jump. Why wouldn't they be the same percentage-wise?
I think it would be related to how much the rate is changing. You know, so in this case, the rate is nearly doubling, where in the last one, the rate was...
I suppose we don't have that slide in there, because
was increasing, you know, maybe...
Yeah.
60%, something like that.
Yeah, I think that's right. So in the TCR rider, it was going from $5.1 million to $6.9 million. Okay. So $1.7 million increase, whereas this one here is going from 2.1 to 4.8, so a $2.7 million increase.
So the difference in implementation is really the how much you're missing out on based on the implementation date.
Okay, thank you.
And then if nothing else were to change in terms of the 10 resources remain, or 8 resources remain constant going into 2021, the rates would be more reflective of a January 1st projection in terms of...
Right, yeah, if we're able to implement on that date, then it would kind of normalize that back out. Okay. And really it ties the recovery period, as Dave said earlier, to the year in which the revenue requirements are calculated.
So on an annualized basis, it would be... the 12-month scenario would be a... Yeah, I got it. I'm just thinking in terms of communicating to customers, what does this mean? Well, it's going to be larger if it's in a condensed period of time, but, you know, on a typical normalized
right. And basis. And we're, you know, we're still collecting from customers based on last year's rate for those first 2 or 3 months. And so there's still a collection amount that's occurring. And so, you know, if we go back to this slide, you know, essentially for the first 3 months of the year, well, this one is still based on a January 1 implementation date, but for the first 3 months of the year, they're paying 89 cents per month. And then if it's a March 1 implementation date, then for the remaining 9 months, 10 months, they would pay $1.99 per month.
Okay.
Perfect. One thing I'd like to know just before we move on with slides, one of the first things that I had found in here that I had concerns with, it ends up that it's correct, everything's okay. However, if you recall back to the 1850 megawatts of wind that were approved in the couple of ADPs a couple of years back now, we had put caps on the expenditures, not on individual projects, but on the total package. You know, so there were build, own, transfer projects. Mm-hmm. There was a couple of PPAs, and I think there was there some that were just self-build?
Yes.
I think. So we had put caps on the, you know, PPAs were what they were. The build, own, transfer, we approved a total that they can go up to. And then we, on the self-build, there was a total that was approved. And then if you dig deep enough into the filing, we had individual amounts that made up those totals. A couple of these projects are anticipated to go slightly over those totals, the individual totals. Mm-hmm. However, the group of them has not yet exceeded that amount, the total amount. So it's something that I think is important for us to watch in coming filings, but for this one, we are still okay.
Okay, now you're testing my memory. Is that the 17 to 21 cent range, generally speaking, for that portfolio? Range in terms of what the cost per kilowatt hour would be?
I think that's probably what it was. I honestly don't recall what it was back then.
Well, I'm glad you brought it up because when I'm looking at the 0.2165 and I realize it's more than just that portfolio. And is it just simply the projects have become more efficient over the course of time, PTCs? But in other words, the 17 to 21, you would think you would at the most be in that 19, maybe 20 range, but previous projects were coming in higher. Is that
that range isn't necessarily what the cost of the wind farm is on a kilowatt hour basis. That's just what the rider rate would be.
For this year.
Right.
All projects can collect.
Right. All projects in this rider combined divided over all kilowatt hours sold would total up to this amount, which isn't even, I mean, this is, you know, 1% of what the probably expected cost of this energy from the wind farms would be, because we're really now looking at the full picture. I mean, if you wanted to really figure out what these are costing on a kilowatt hour basis, we should start with just the kilowatt hours produced by these wind farms divided by the total revenue requirement. And then we can come to what the actual cost per kilowatt hour is. This isn't really a good representation for that, in my opinion.
And those costs were the average cost over the life of the project, I'm assuming.
Correct. So that's, yeah, it's very much going to vary from year to year.
Oh.
And particularly that we'll get into later, you know, depending on what method you're using to recognize those, vary more or less. But anyway, I just wanted to note that so that it's something we keep an eye on in future filings.
That's a good point.
So, Victor, are you thinking you'll, I know it's hard to say right now, but you're going to look at it on project by project or collectively?
Well, as far as something that we can do something about at this in a rider filing. The total of the projects has to exceed the amount that was agreed, or I guess it was agreed to in the settlement, but more so the commission ordered it in those ADP proceedings. So if the total expenditure exceeds that amount, they cannot recover it during the current rider update. They can request that in a future proceeding, you know, in a rate case or something along those lines. But they need to take extra steps to collect a higher amount.
Sure. All right.
But it was not broken down on an individualized basis.
For the cap, no.
Right.
I mean,
okay.
We did have a breakdown of what made those totals.
Sure.
Up. The order did not say you're capped by project. It said you're capped by the total.
Good.
Minus, and the reason for the breakdown is minus any projects you don't do. So we wanted to make sure that if you don't do a couple, two, three of these projects, that you don't still get the total of, have an extra $500 million to spend.
Right. So. Got it. Thank you.
The next slide goes into the PTC discussion, and so I figured I'd pause there for 1 second if there's any other discussion on these slides, and I know we can't go back, but I thought that might be a good pause before we go into the next ones. Okay, I will proceed. And so, as Dave mentioned earlier, we had some questions, and I know out of last year's informal hearing, there was some questions around PTCs, and so we did file a letter kind of laying out the different options that we've kind of modeled through conversations with Victor throughout this, since we filed this petition, and some of the stuff that we had kind of put together last year in regards to some of the questions we got out of last year's informal. And so I'll walk through kind of a view of how we've presented these PTCs and the different methods that we've modeled out, and then we can address any questions. And so just to baseline everybody, the standard treatment for PTCs is right now any PTC we earn, we immediately pass it back to customers through that current year's, whatever year that was earned, we pass that through the rate for this RER rider. And so what we've modeled out two different proposals from that standard method, one that we're calling a levelized, and so basically taking what we project the full PTCs to be over the life of a wind farm and spreading it equally over that period of time. And then the second method is what we refer to as the Victor method, where we're taking those same total PTCs, but then spreading it based on the amount of return that is baked into the revenue requirement for each one of these wind farms. And so it creates a different spread across the life of that wind project.
Are all eight of these being depreciated over the same number of years?
Yes.
25?
Yes. Yep.
25 years. Ben, you might not be aware that latter method has been trademarked. It's called the Shook Look.
The Shook Look?
Shook Look.
Shook Look.
We thought it was pending, the term.
Oh, no. He pushed it through fast. Yeah. He's very powerful.
So we'll have to update our slides with the new naming convention. So I apologize. We do not have that.
Be sure to include the T.
Yeah.
No.
TM.
TM, is it?
Yep,
TM. TM.
And so as we're going through this, I guess of the two methods, we gravitate towards the levelized method, where it's sharing that PTCs across the entire life of that wind farm, the entire 25 years spreading the evening, for a couple reasons. Number one, it's a little bit simpler, right, because you're just taking what's the total PTCs divided by the 25-year life, and that's how much gets allocated to each year. There'll be a true-up component, obviously, that we'll have to go in with that since, you know, we don't know what that wind production is going to be out in 15, 20, 25 years, et cetera. But, in those first 10 years, we don't know exactly what that wind production is going to be, so there'll have to be some type of true-up, but it makes it easier to explain. And it addresses the generational PTC issue, right? So right now, customers in the first 10 years get the benefit of those PTCs, and then the last 15 years, they get nothing. This gives every one of those customers over those 25 years the same benefit, minus a little true-up that might come into play. It maintains a traditional revenue requirement profile, and so I have a couple charts that will kind of show what that looks like, but layering it or setting it next to all kinds of different assets that are placed in service over time, typically that pattern is in the first few years of an asset's life, it's got a higher revenue requirement, and then that declines over time. And so this kind of maintains that same shape over the asset's life. And it helps mitigate future costs. And so as new resources come onto the system 5 years, 10 years, 15 years down the road, it kind of maintains a little more consistency across that period of time. And the graphs will kind of show that. And so this first one, this dotted line, shows no PTCs, just the raw wind farm, what the revenue requirements are, what the revenue requirements are over the full life of the projects that we have included in this RER petition. The second, this green line here, and I don't know if the green line, it's a green line on the printoff as well, that shows how we're returning that today. And so you can see that's a really odd shape, right? You got a lot of PTCs going back in those first 10 years, and then it goes up to match that raw revenue requirement line and then continues on down from there as you proceed through the rest of the life. The blue line shows the levelized method where you're spreading it over the full life of the wind farms. And so as you can see, it maintains a very consistent shape with a raw revenue requirement. And so, peaks in the early years and then declines from there. And then the Victor method kind of creates a straight, or the Shug look, creates a straight line across essentially the entire 25 years. Obviously, there's a ramp-up phase at the beginning as these projects are coming into service, and then as they go out of service at the end, it kind of goes down a little bit. But generally speaking, if you looked at the path of one individual discrete project, it would be up and then level and then down at the end. So it creates a little different look, and so that's where, I don't know, maybe through the full structure of our rate base, maybe there won't be any, volatility in those rates when you kind of drop one discrete resource off. I think it's just looking at kind of how a traditional revenue requirement path would look. It just raises the question, like, is that going to cause any unintended consequences out into the future? And so this is just the way we looked at it.
If I could interrupt there. So I look at this graphic, and then on our sheets, we have two on each sheet, so it lays out nice. The previous one with kind of the four reasons for preferring the levelized method. And so I get your arguments with number one, that it's more understandable and simple to administer, and number four, with the decrease in revenue requirement pattern. But the middle two, when I look at this and you say, well, the blue line addresses generational PTC inequity and maintains the traditional annual revenue requirement profile, which would be the black, better. And so I will agree the blue is closer to the black, but the red is closer to the black than the green has been. So why weren't you bringing up these arguments for the past few years? Why do these only come up now when this commission has brought up the huge inequity generationally that's been happening?
Yeah, and I think from our perspective, these were credits that are earned in a specific year, and so then returning it back to those customers as soon as possible. And so similar to the TCJA, where we updated that rate and give that money back to customers right away, as opposed to necessarily spreading it out over time. These PTCs, we looked at it in the same view. Like, if we hold that money back, essentially we're holding customers' money, and so that's where we were like, okay, we're going to give it back to customers as soon as we earn them.
I get that, but aren't the second and third arguments like in favor of the levelized method if something is going to change, even in better arguments opposed to doing what has been happening?
I mean, I agree that the green line is by far the furthest away from what a traditional revenue requirement would be. I fully agree with that.
Thank you.
Could I ask a question real quick, Mr. Chairman? So just as a hypothetical, back when you brought forward one of these projects using the standard PTC treatment method, say hypothetically you were hearing about wind farms repowering around year 10, almost because they could recapture those PTCs. If we had done a different method and one of these farms had done that, would we have then lost out on those production tax credits?
I would say no. I mean, we earn based on the generation of when
sure.
when that wind generation occurs, that's when the PTCs are
right.
earned and calculated. And so you, if they repower later on and they qualify for new PTCs, they would get those then as well.
Right under that standard PTC method. I feel like I explained that
okay.
or asked that question poorly. Say hypothetically, say we did the Victor method or the levelized credit method, then would we have been at risk of losing out on those production, those PTCs?
I'm guessing if we came and said that we're keeping those, you wouldn't allow us to do so. And so
sure.
I would say under the Victor method, it would all get trued up. And so it would be equivalent to if our wind production somehow spikes in year five outside of what we forecasted it to be,
mm-hmm.
That'll be picked up and spread out over the remaining life of that wind farm. And so we wouldn't be keeping it under either. And so then if somehow PTCs get extended beyond their current life as we know today, and some of these wind farms would repower at some point in the future, those same PTCs then would come into this calculation and then change this profile again.
Okay. That makes a lot of sense.
And so I would argue that it's similar to if we misforecast, and you'll just get kind of all captured in that spreading going forward.
Okay. Thank you.
I think I know where Jack was going with that. Just to kind of clarify, so neither the levelized nor the Victor method would change what the company does on its tax returns. So the company would actually be earning these on their tax returns in the first 10 years as they always would have. They're simply applying them differently to the revenue requirements.
Right.
So, and I agree with what Ben was saying, is that this would not prohibit a repower in future PTCs if they were to be extended for whatever reason by the federal government.
Right. No, I understand that.
Yep.
I was just about capturing it
sure.
from the back end, but that makes sense once you explain it to me. Thank you.
Yep. So that covers the slides that I had around PTCs.
Okay.
I guess I do have slide 14 that gives all four lines with a customer bill impact. All the previous slides had the revenue requirement numbers. This is the customer bill impact. So you can kind of see, you know, using that same average residential customer, this is what their impact would be across the full life for these projects in the RER rider.
One question on the implementation of renewable rider. So similar to the transmission rider, I'm assuming you need about 10 days
Correct.
To implement.
Yep.
To
Victor, remind me which of these methods you are open to.
I'm open to any of the methods. So
I
still...
When you said, no, that just doesn't work. Was it the red one? Was it your method?
I don't think I said my method doesn't work. That sounds silly.
It does sound silly, seeing how you trademarked it.
Victor, please stop arguing with yourself.
I am advocacy staff in this proceeding, I do not have an advocacy position where I'm saying there's only one correct method. I think you can, I know I can make a completely straight-faced, reasonable argument that any one of the three is an appropriate method.
Okay. I thought the last time we talked about this, you said now that we're looking at this more closely, this there was a method, maybe it's not on the sheet, that didn't really work. No?
Well, I think these are the only three that we've been talking
okay.
about. They have pros and cons. It really... I think what I recall saying the last time we had talked about the different methods was think about what you want to accomplish with, you know, with a change. Do you want to levelize the cost of a wind farm? Do you want to levelize the impact of PTC value over time? Or do you want to keep doing how we've been doing it? I don't think we've heard anything at this point saying that we're violating any laws by right. doing something different. And we have, obviously, we've asked for feedback from all three companies on that to kind of ensure there's not some major roadblock out there. That's not to say we can't, that wouldn't one wouldn't pop up somewhere in 5-10 years, but at present, it looks like any method is doable, in my opinion. It really, they have their benefits. I mean, if you compare, for example, you know, if you're looking at residential bill impacts on that last slide 14, you know, we're going from $2 a month under the normal method that we've always been doing to the stray levelized, where that's more than double the cost to the average residential customer. Granted, it's $2 a month, but that's double the cost of, mm-hmm. of the rider today. And something else, so all of the comparisons that we have are residential customers. Something else to think about is there are commercial and industrial customers that use a whole lot more, that their impact is going to be hundreds, if not thousands of dollars a month.
Mm-hmm. Where do we leave it? Can you remind me? I should have looked at our notes from the last session.
So
I thought we kind of were.
We wanted to
in one direction.
The feeling I got at the last informal we had with MDU was that the three of you seemed to be leaning towards the shook look, but it wasn't set in stone.
Okay.
Everyone is interested to know what the numbers look like for each company, you know, how drastic the change is between each of the three different methods, and what any legal or other concerns from each company would be.
If I remember correctly as well, I felt, at least from my standpoint, that we were mixing which model we were speaking about. I think you felt the same way after that.
Yes.
As well. That we so at the end, I wasn't quite sure which model we were fully planning on implementing, but I thought we were going to then have an additional discussion, because I think the parties as well as staff felt the parameters really had to be laid out very clearly going forward, since this is something unique, as well as the fact that it has to stay in the riders as well.
We knew we still the opportunity existed to continue gathering information, getting feedback through this informal hearing, for example.
Yes.
So I don't know that I was actually leaning in any direction. The last time around, I'm still processing a lot of numbers and trying to anticipate the unknown.
Sure.
Which is very difficult, obviously, to do. And not look at back on this in 5 years and thinking we're doing a really good thing, because conceptually I like the conversation. But I also want to make sure we're not missing something. So again, in 5 years or 10 years, you look back and you think, well, maybe that wasn't such a good idea.
Right. And that is, it's a thought. It's a concern. One thought I do have is doing one of either the levelized or the shook look method. If you get down the road 5 or 10 years and decide, man, we really don't like this. We would really like to go back to the old way. We're going to have a big old kitty bank full of like $20 million that makes it much less painful to go back.
Was that kitty or kitty?
Did I say kitty? Piggy.
Piggy bank. Okay, there we go. Sorry, I misheard you. Didn't hear that.
Kitty bank.
What did we decide to, where do we leave it, though? I mean, because we can't drag these out for forever. We need to get rolling. So, we had
so in that, in MDU's proceeding, we had left it with the company and myself needed to file something, which we have for their proceeding, but to basically look for a quick turnaround. I think we were looking for, if we wanted to implement a change, whatever it was, and there, in that case, both sides agreed to kind of fast track it to happen by March 1, if memory serves.
And just to add to that, my understanding was when we left that MDU, was at an informal or work session, whatever it was, that I certainly understood that we wanted to hear from the other companies too, because I think it's, in my opinion, I think this is a philosophical thing, and we adopt the same model for one as the other. And now we've gotten feedback from the second, and we also have the written. We haven't had the informal yet with the third.
Right.
And I think I'm much more comfortable now with making a decision. And when you asked if Victor had ruled one out earlier, and he said, no, not really. But I will say that now having this information from the three companies, I know I find that the green line on here, the standard PTC treatment, to be just unacceptable.
Sure.
I mean, you look at that, and if you were just starting fresh with, okay, how should we pay for a generation source over the course of 25 years, and you had those four lines drawn out on a sheet, I don't think anyone would logically come up with that. Oh, that seems like a good idea to push everything back for 10 years. So, not everything, but so much of it. So I really, in my mind, this comes down to the fully levelized or partially levelized options.
Okay. So should we do the same thing that we're doing? You guys work together, come back with it.
What else would you like to see? So we have, the company made a filing last Friday that should have been distributed to everyone this morning. It has the same graph as what there was on the presentation today, but it has some additional numbers in it where you can see the...
this one.
So I guess in... I don't have anything else that I need to know.
Okay.
But we're certainly, I mean, the reason that we're having this informal and we have another, you know, after this... We were originally planned to have a work session on the MDU case, and that's been turned into an informal just so we can fully vet whatever your questions or concerns are, rather than trying to work it through the work session with advisory staff, and, kind of secondhand passing stuff to the company and advocacy staff. So,
and one thing that I've not seen, I think I've seen it for one of the other companies, and I see it for Excel in this case, but I don't think I've seen it for all three companies, is like this graphic 14 where it has it laid out as that average residential rate increase.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I frankly look at these lines and I think, well, you know, the blue line here is closest to normal regulatory rate making, and yet as we evaluate all three, my whole 7 years here, but I think it's historically much more so than that, that this commission has paid attention to sudden rate impacts and not trying to avoid rate shock. And so if the blue line becomes too much of a rate shock issue, then I think we go with the red line version.
So I'm missing some pages on this filing. Can somebody summarize what you guys concluded in this?
It's, here's the whole filing.
It's not your guys' fault. I think it was a copying error.
They just kind of covered the concerns. And I think they covered the majority of what's in this filing with their presentation today. I don't know if you disagree.
Yep. Yeah, I think that's totally fair. I mean, this walks through and provides a little more context and a little more detail behind it, but I think I've kind of summarized that within the slides here today.
And the graph is identical.
Yeah, the one graph that we provided in the letter is just the residential bill impact view, whereas in the slides we've showed both the revenue requirement and the residential bill impact view. But otherwise, the residential impact view is identical to what was in the slides.
So you guys prefer the levelized, the blue one?
I would say...
Not you, the company.
Right. No, absolutely. I agree.
Yeah, I mean, that one keeps it as close as possible to kind of a standard rate treatment. But, I mean, we're not wedded to that. We don't, I don't know what all, you know, potential impacts there might be. Maybe there won't be any. And so, you know, we laid out kind of those four bullet points of our concern. And really it's, you know, between the full levelized and the Victor method. You know, I agree that the green line does look very odd when you lay it next to like a standard treatment. And so, you know, I agree those two make the most sense, and just having uncertainty around what might happen at the end of this and not knowing is why we would prefer the levelized method.
I would say I think most of the companies are leaning towards the levelized as their preference rather than the Victor method, because it's simpler to calculate. There's really not as much variation. It's simply dividing it out equally over the number of years that you got left, where mine, the Victor method, just has a few more calculations involved because that's what I like doing. So that's kind of my take. But I would also agree the straight levelized makes a wind farm look like every other utility asset.
Right. It's just a challenge to go into that now because of the rate shock.
Yes, absolutely agree.
For the industrial customers and some of the larger users. I don't think the residential would really probably notice it a whole lot, but
not to a huge degree. They would. I mean, so it really depends. So each company has, you know, their graphs all look very similar. But the best one, I really don't want to get into the case necessarily in this proceeding because we don't have it noticed here, but Otter Tail's filing probably does the best job of showing here's in their most pure form what the three methods look like, because Otter Tail is one wind farm and it's from birth to death of that wind farm exactly what it looks like. So it does the best job of showing what the methods look like and act like over time.
Okay. So I guess one thing I wouldn't mind hearing your perspective on this then. So for the next, like a gas plant that comes in then, if we're concerned about rate shock when it comes in through a generational rider, will you be looking at then also, I guess, levelizing that out as well?
Oh. No.
Okay, so just specifically for wind projects, we're worried about the rate shock, but then we won't be worried about for different projects.
I'm not advocating
for
any one of these, but... I absolutely agree with what you're saying, Jack. It would be treating wind farms different than other utility assets, including like the generation, any other generation.
Right, but
resource.
I guess following up with that, then you're saying you're not advocating for one or the other, but you said the next another resource comes along, then you say you will have a position on that one, because you said you will not accept the Victor method for equalizing that out. So then you would be willing to treat different resources differently, even aside from the PTC anomaly.
Well, I guess that's the differentiator in my opinion, is the PTCs here versus they don't exist anywhere else.
Right.
Sure.
You know, if there was such a thing for another type of generation asset, I would be open to considering the idea.
Well, we talked about that in the last one where this is a government-imposed anomaly, kind of like the tax reform. And we spread those benefits out longer in some cases, too.
Sure. Yes.
I think it's... I view it like Victor does.
Sure. And that's fine as well. But I guess when I initially thought the commission was coming forward and had some interest in this, I thought this was... The main concern was capturing those production tax credits on the and making sure that all the customers retain that benefit, which that seemed to be it sounds like the company is proposing the levelized credit method. They're viewing that as the way that captures and spreads it across, because we previously had concerns then that we're taking all these benefits on the front end and instead pushing the cost then on later on to those customers. They're not getting those benefits. If we take the third method, the shook look on this one, it would appear to me too then that we're actually, instead of spreading those PTCs across the life to the benefit of all the customers, we're actually pushing those costs on the back end to those customers, because at that point in time, they're paying a higher amount to the value of that depreciated asset.
Yep.
And so I guess when I was looking at it, just to the point of creating, there's this PTC anomaly out there to capture that and make sure the spread across, it would seem that the levelized credit method would probably be capturing that. However, I guess if we are looking at the rate shock asset and we do want to create this treat this as a separate asset, I mean, different than the other resources as well from that standpoint, that we could do it that way as well. But I guess I just want to make sure I put that point out there that it did seem like we're kind of stepping outside the box on that.
I've thought about that, too. It's been a concern of mine as I look at that red line and you look at how much customers are paying at the end of an asset's life.
Sure.
So, yeah, that's the downside.
It's a lot better than the green line. Not the very last 3 or 4 years, but for over half of the term.
Agreed.
I just don't want rate shock to scare us off of doing anything and then end up doing the green line.
Yeah.
Sure.
Are we making too much of the rate shock? Is it possible to get numbers on that?
Well, I think that's what the company has in this.
Where?
This slide. So this is the rate.
Yeah, I know, but impact per month. Impact. See, this is residential.
Yeah, the table at the end of that letter.
Okay. Oh, there we go.
Is that?
That's just residential.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, it's residential.
So we say in the letter that it's about $1.30. The impact for the levelized method. Right away, and I think that's shown somewhere in there.
For residential.
Yeah, for residential.
See, I'm just worried. I mean, the rate impact would be for the...
commercial.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It looks to me like a completely levelized is about a $2.50 increase from $2 to $4.50. Am I looking at that wrong?
$2 to $4.50, yeah.
And to the Victor model, it would be about a 50, 60 cents.
Well, I think what's kind of important to note here, so the green line here, you know, 2019 rates aren't...
Here's the dollars. Oh, 2020. The 2019
rate was 73 cents per month. And the proposal
goes
up to 1.62 at this, in, on the green.
In the peak is 2021,
yeah,
and not 2020. So 2020, the difference isn't quite as...
It's not very obvious, but it's about $1.30 on 2020. And then 2021, it kind of peaks out, and that's all on that last table on that page.
Okay, I was going by that peak. That's what I was
saying. There would be, I think, a minimal difference.
Yeah.
It's still a dollar, almost $1.30.
And the
typical $1.34, the blue line.
Correct.
Yep.
The red line is like
minimal. Minor. Oh yeah.
Oh, 25 cents.
Yes. And the $1.30 is relative to about a $80 to $90 average bill. To give some perspective, so you're looking at a little over 1.5% to 2%, probably somewhere in that. So.
Mm. And would the same percentage apply to the other users, or their percentages might be different because their rates are a little
harder to say.
Yeah,
I don't know that. I mean, I'm assuming that we should be able to calculate something.
Yeah, I guess that would be the only information I'd be interested in having. It would help me because, quite honestly, I prefer the blue method, but for the rate shock, potential rate shock, just because it does follow the more traditional profile of... or depreciation profile of these assets, and I think there's value to that, but I prefer the red line over the green line. Shook look over the current method.
There's a certain irony in applying a different treatment in order to make the regulatory asset look the same.
Victor, you have a sense probably of what Otter Tail is on this as well, even though we're probably going to be talking about this more and they'll have an opportunity to speak down the road. They provide filings. Where do you feel that they are probably at on these methods as well?
Otter Tail, I would categorize as open to any method that the commission so chooses. They made note that they actually recommended the levelized method when they were on their first renewable rider in 2007,
yes.
I believe.
Can we blend their thoughts into or speculate on that in this
there's really,
setting?
They don't. Their filing is the shortest of the three.
Right. No, I'm just talking about the fact that this is an
legal
informal
standpoint.
With.
I thought about that, Commissioner, and I think we can take notice of what they've already provided to us. And so, I mean, we should make a decision on their case based upon what the single filing without the opportunity for them to develop a record of that as well. But just, I think this is more for the purpose of administration. For example, we have a couple different methods here, mm-hmm. and it sounds like there's some interest in a couple different methods. And it may be easier to set the parameters and the frameworks for staff and the company for one as opposed to setting it for two at the same time. Mm-hmm. I don't know how you feel about that, Victor. Is it very simple then to have that discussion for the two different methods and come up with those exact parameters in a later filing?
Yes. Which parameters would be?
Well, that's where I was trying to get at. Is first, so we have the two different methods, the Victor method and the levelized credit method, which seems like there's some interest for both of them at this point in time.
Yep.
To do just one individually, would that be preferable?
Because
there's a lot of things to hash out.
Agreed.
Right, okay.
I would agree. The preference would be if we're doing this for one company, we do it the same for all three companies.
Sure.
And I think that would...
And right, I guess I wasn't necessarily trying to go there. I was trying to say for the next filing what you were working on with the company, would it be easier to only have to work on one of these individually, one of these methods, or both of them? I mean,
it would be simpler to work on one, I agree.
Sure.
But I don't think it's impossible to do both if the commissioners are undecided on which they would prefer.
Okay. So I guess if we have the opportunity then to get a little more direction from the commission if there is a real preferred method, I think that would be beneficial, at least for advocacy staff, unless at this time we're still fairly undecided on the matter.
Yeah. No, duly noted, and I agree with that. I'm just thinking, okay, we're going to want to get into a work session.
Sure.
Soon. So we can give some direction. I'm just wondering.
Well, you heard my direction. Was that enough? I prefer the blue method if it's not, once we look at the rate shock.
And I think what you'd like to probably see is maybe the different types of customers, so maybe a commercial and industrial and residential. Here's the rate differences
between those two methods.
That will help you kind of form your thoughts a little bit better.
Yeah, and I think the blue method does mimic the traditional, and that's important it's an important change from the green method, which I think, either way, we're going to get away from that one, I hope.
Sure.
But the shook look, still in the running.
We'll have to fight another day if nothing else.
In my race, it is.
Well, we've had some really good information that's come in just in the last few days, January 17th, on your latest filing here. And
although we really
the conversation
need,
today. Go ahead.
We really need to give direction quickly so that the final filings can be passed, because whatever it's going to be, it's even more dramatic if it doesn't start until April instead of starting in March. And I don't see much changing. Just to weigh in, I have emphasized that I would find either the blue line or the red line acceptable, but I find the green line completely unacceptable. If given my choice, when originally bringing up this concern about what we were doing, the simple way was the blue line. That's what I initially laid out one time, and I guess if the rate shock is not excessive to cause derailment of the whole thing, that's where I still would be at.
Is there anything else any of you would like to see to help kind of frame your thoughts for a decision? I think I don't even know if I need to work with the company, but I think the company can provide some charts and graphs and numbers relatively simply.
Yeah, I would think that we'd be able to put it out to average customers from other classes to give you some context of what that would look like.
Good.
Here's the question that I would pose to the company. I would have been in your office asking after, but or conferring with staff. How and using your words, Victor, not probably going to repeat them exactly, but I think you said something to the effect that the company would gravitate toward the levelized. It's a simpler method versus your method. So from a company's perspective, how complex is the Shook model?
I mean, I would say it's not. I mean, in terms of the revenue requirement calculation in this, either method is simpler than that calculation. And so either method can be calculated with not a lot of difficulty. I think the levelized method, I think, would just be easier to explain more broadly, and as opposed to kind of the nuances of, people that are more familiar with a revenue requirement calculation, I don't think they're going to have a lot of difficulty understanding the Victor method either.
So not overly burdensome.
Not overly burdensome. I think it's just a little simpler.
Okay, because that's one of the factors that I'm weighing out in terms of.
Yeah, that's not a good question.
Okay. All right. We have a 3 o'clock that we're now beyond the 3 o'clock period. But anything else from Commissioner Fedorchuk? Anything else from you?
Nope.
Commissioner Christman?
No, sir.
Staff? From the company's perspective or anything else you want to add? Okay. Then make sure I've got the handouts. Well, the handouts, as well as the audio recording of the proceeding, are now considered evidence. Are there any objections to this evidence becoming a part of the official record upon which a decision will be made? Staff? No objections? Company?
No.
And the evidence as presented will now become part of the official record upon which a decision will be made. Seeing no other matters related to this informal hearing is now closed. Thank you.